Hi, my name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, and we are having a conversation about polar bears, and more specifically, climate change connected to polar bears. Because everything that I've been told over the last few years is that polar bears are dying out, and that's all because I'm driving my car to the shop. My guest is I hope I got this right. It's Dr. Susan Crockford. Yeah. Have I got that correct? Welcome. Thank you for joining me, Susan.
Yes, a pleasure. Nice to meet you.
So let's just quickly do your bio. I'm tempted to read the Wikipedia entry, but I suspect that, as always is the case, it's a little bit biased in the wrong direction. You've got 35 odd years, if I'm correct, with polar bears. You are a zoologist. And you just said to me a few minutes ago, a former adjunct professor. Have I got that right?
That's right, at the University of Victoria in Canada.
Okay, so just before we go any further, what is your general history?
I've got a specific interest in Arctic ecology.
Right.
And evolution, particularly speciation. And I've got dozens of peer-reviewed papers published in scientific journals on a variety of topics. I was an adjunct professor between 2004 and 2019 until my views on polar bears caused my appointment to not be renewed. But I also am co-owner of a private consulting firm called Pacific Identifications that identifies animal bones for biologists and archaeologists.
So what you're saying is that you don't know much about animals. So your forte is polar bears. Now, I was just telling you before we went live, I watched a documentary on Netflix a few days ago, narrated by David Attenborough, and it was showing walruses falling off a cliff, and it was all tragic, and it was just terrible. And he was going on about how I must feel terrible about my existence and the way I live my life. But we know that, for example, these kinds of documentaries can be skewed. Not so. What I mean, you know what happened there.
Yes. Well, and you know, our attention was drawn to that because I've been keeping up with the narrative on kind of trying to make walruses be another icon for climate change. Mm. And every time the herds of mothers and calves come on shore for the summer, there's big reports in the news about how this is an indicator that they're in trouble and so on and so forth, when in fact, if you go and look at the literature, which is what I do, go back to the science and discover that in fact the walrus have been doing that for decades. Mm. And that this isn't a new phenomenon, and that one of the things that happens with walruses is that their population goes up and down. And we happen to be at a really high point in terms of population numbers,
right,
which simply means that when the walrus come on shore during the ice-free season, they're going to be in larger herds because there's more of them. And so there is no correlation between the levels of sea ice, particularly and them coming ashore, mm, nor is there any correlation between the levels of sea ice and any drop in population or any, you know, starving walrus or any, no reports of any of that kind of thing. So I was already on the alert. Mm. And then when Attenborough made his first Netflix documentary showing walruses falling off cliffs and then blaming that on climate change, I knew that was a bogus,
right,
conclusion, but I also knew that there had been a report a few months before about polar bears driving walrus off the cliff. And so I suspected that in fact it was the presence of polar bears spooking the walruses that had actually caused them to fall off the cliff. And then Attenborough came out a few months later with a BBC documentary, actually with film, showing the polar bears basically herding these walrus off the cliff. So it's just so many of them die in that instance that what it does then it's is leaves food for the bears to feed on. So it really is a hunting strategy that they've learned, and it's been happening since 2007. And so it's not an absolutely new phenomenon. So to see that Attenborough and BBC and World Wildlife Fund, which were all involved in making both of these documentaries, to so dishonestly portray this particular event was really disturbing. And you know, really, people should know about this. And when they see those kinds of claims, their red flag should go up. You know, to say, you know, this really doesn't sound right.
So, I mean, that's why I was mentioning it now, because once you know that there is a manipulation of the narrative, then you need to start looking at the follow-up documentaries with a bit of a critical eye. And where I'm going with that is another narrative that has been dominating at least my media for years is that polar bears are dwindling in numbers. And you've got a book out, which I've got, and I recommend everybody buy it. It's in the link below. But it's called The Polar Bear Catastrophe That Never Happened. And I'm guessing that has to do now with the story of dwindling polar bears and your research suggesting that it's not quite true.
Well, one of the things to remember is that the dwindling polar bear narrative is about a prediction. It's another one of these model predictions that suggested that in the future that numbers would go down. But even at the time those predictions were made, polar bear numbers were fine.
Yeah.
So the main prediction that I'm addressing is the one that was made in 2007 by American biologists who were presenting research to support getting the bears put on the U.S. endangered species list. So that was their goal, was to get that to happen. And what their models were suggesting was that when the sea ice in the summer, not in the winter, right, but in the summer, declined to about 42% less than what had occurred in 1979, then their model suggested that two-thirds of the world's polar bears would be gone. And that would
By what year?
And so that would be between 2040 to 2050.
Right.
Was when the ice model suggested that would happen.
And that didn't happen.
So it was, you know, at that time it was considered to be decades into the future when that would happen. And even then, so the alarm bells were ringing. But the problem was that, in fact, just a few months after that report was released, in September 2007, already the sea ice in summer dropped abruptly. In fact, to the levels that were not predicted to happen until mid-century. And in fact, the levels have stayed more or less at that level ever since that time. And so what I've been able to do is to, because their prediction was precise, to say if the sea ice dropped to that level for 8 out of 10 years, this is what should happen. And in fact, after 10 years, that's what we could say.
Okay, but if you don't mind me playing devil's advocate just for a moment.
Yep.
How many polar bears are there? And I'm asking that because I'm guessing it's difficult to know because the conditions are very harsh. So humans are probably not easily maneuverable in that area. And also polar bears are dangerous. So how do we know what the numbers are? What is the official number, and how do you know what the numbers are?
Well, you're absolutely right. They are difficult to count. At the time that prediction was made, the numbers that the biologists were using was 24,500.
Yeah.
The official number right now that's used by the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, so that's the IUCN, they put out a red list in 2015. They said the population was 26,000. So that would seem to indicate a slight increase in numbers, but probably not, you know, within right. statistical limits. But what the predictions were saying was that the number would drop to about 8,000.
Oh, no, that's quite different.
So, you know, I mean, we know that it's difficult to get a precise number of how many, but certainly there's more than 8,000.
Yeah, well, there's certainly more than 20,000.
Yes. So, you know, we know that their prediction
right.
was wrong.
And is 20,000 or 25,000 considered endangered?
No.
No.
And that's the thing, is that there are considered to be, the bears are widely distributed throughout their traditional habitat.
Mm.
There are no small, like, subpopulations that have declined in a repeated manner. There are still, you know, reproducing well, which is, by all biological accounts, a measure of a thriving species. But
yeah.
So the status of threatened is based entirely on the predictions.
So what is...
Which is not true for any other animal.
And
that's
sure.
the confusing part, is that the polar bear was the first one where they used this future prediction
mm.
to base the conservation status on instead of the current population size.
Yeah, and
so that's why it's confusing to people.
And I think what you're saying can be extended to rhinoceroses, which are, you know, under threat, and they don't look at predictions or projections to tell if they're endangered. They look at the actual number of
yes.
rhinos.
Exactly.
Which doesn't make sense in for polar bears.
No, and it's one of the things where, you know, I was going into school classrooms
mm.
A few years ago, and because teachers wanted me to talk about polar bears, and I asked the teachers how many polar bears they thought were left in the world, and the standard answer was between a few hundred to a few thousand.
Oh, my word.
And they were all flabbergasted to hear that the official estimate was 26,000, because they were assuming that status of threatened would not have been put on the bears unless their population was low. And so it really is a very confusing situation.
Okay, but then why are they continuing to promote polar bears as in dire conditions?
Well, because they started back in about the year 2000 using it as an icon for climate change.
Mm.
And so it's really important for them to keep up this narrative
right.
of bears being in trouble. And that's why every time, you know, somebody takes a picture of a starving polar bear, it goes viral on the internet.
Mm.
And everybody, you know, gets everybody all worked up, even though a polar bear specialist will tell you that
mm.
starvation is the leading cause of death. It's, you know, it's the only way that polar bears die.
It's also the only way it's the way many animals in the wild die.
Exactly.
There's that famous image of that polar bear standing on that little piece of ice.
Yes.
And I think that's been used so many times, and I think it's even been doctored a few times for dramatic effect.
Yes.
But what I want to know from you is the climate in the Arctic changing? I don't know how to ask this. Yes, the Arctic is changing, but is it changing to the point that it is affecting the behavior of polar bears?
Well, at some level, yes. I mean, it definitely is changing. There's
mm.
no denying the fact that the ice levels in summer have dropped
mm.
And that's, but they're not continuing to drop. As I said, they dropped really in 2007 for summer sea ice levels,
right,
and have been kind of going up and down since then.
Yeah.
So there has not been a continuous dramatic decline. And what we see, for example, in an area in the Barents Sea, for example, for a number of years, the ice around the major archipelago called Svalbard was not high enough to support polar bear females making their dens there over the winter.
Mm.
And so, you know, there were some specialists, polar bear specialists, who were, you know, hand-wringing about, you know, what this was going to mean.
Mm.
Well, what the bears did was just went to another island archipelago that's just to the west that they traditionally use also, still within the Barents Sea, and but the ice is more stable there because it's not as influenced.
Sorry, can I pause you? Where?
Yeah.
I don't know exactly know geographically where this area is, just more or less on the map.
It's just north of Norway.
Oh, right, okay.
So and it is actually governed by the Svalbard area is governed by and managed by
okay.
Norway, and the areas that the bears have moved to is called Franz Josef,
right.
Josef Land, and it is owned by Russia.
Oh.
So it's a split thing, but with the area, the polar bear area, is called the Barents Sea because that's the geographic area.
Okay, so I just want to understand something more from you, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that because of the environment in which polar bears live, they are incredibly hardy animals. I mean, that's pretty one of the most extreme conditions in which you can live. How long have polar bears been around?
Well, that is a contested issue,
right,
to say the least. There's been some genetic work done. Unfortunately, just about every new paper that comes out comes up with a different answer. But it seems to be somewhere between 400,000 and 600,000 years. So they're a young species in the Arctic relative to other animals. And just to give you a basis, like bearded seal and ring seal, which are the primary prey species, have been in the Arctic for more than 2 million years.
Sure.
And so polar bears are relative newcomers. But still, we know from geology that the sea ice levels have changed dramatically,
right,
up and down,
yeah,
even over 600,000 years. And so there has been lots of periods with much more ice and also periods with much less ice, even than what we have now.
So they can clearly handle changes in the climate.
Exactly. And, you know, what we don't know is how much the population might have gone up or down during those periods, because, you know, nobody was around to count them. But clearly, they survived through too much ice and too little ice, so that they could be the thriving species that they are today.
Are there more polar bears now than what there were, say, 10,000 years ago? Or you can name any era. I just want to know an average count.
We don't know for sure, but there are some indications from genetics, and, you know, it's a bit hard to know how much weight to put on those, but that there's some indication from genetics that there was a drop in numbers at the end of or during the last ice age, which would suggest that having too much ice, like all of the ice during the ice age that pushed them out of the polar basin and really left them just living on the edge of that sea ice mass, that had a more devastating effect on their numbers than the warm period with less sea ice in the summer than that came before that.
Okay, so polar bears are a good indication of climate change. Would that be correct? And if, in other words, if polar bear numbers are going down, then that's not, then that means the Earth is warming, in some very crude sense.
No, because I'm actually saying the opposite.
Right.
The little evidence that we have is that it's the really cold periods. Like an ice age period would cause polar bear numbers to go down, but warm periods.
Why? Sorry. Why would that be though? If they do well in cold areas.
Because there is a threshold, and that what happened during the last ice age was that there was so much ice that it pushed the bears out to the edges and really did reduce their habitat even in winter. So. And in the last warm period, there was less ice in summer, but the polar bears really don't need ice in the summer. They need ice in winter and in spring. Those are the critical times.
So in that documentary I mentioned earlier, there was an episode or there was a scene in which they were showing polar bears walking on a lot of flat ice. And David Attenborough made the comment that, and I can't quite remember what the reasoning was, but he said because of climate change, the ice on which they're walking is flatter and making it harder for them to hunt. I couldn't remember the reasoning behind that, but he was making the implication that they have to walk much further to find food. And that didn't quite make sense to me if the ice retreats in summer and then expands in winter as it always has done.
Yeah. I think that what he was referring to was that there was a study that looked at the movement of ice, and that study suggested that in some instances it meant that bears would have to move against the flow of the ice so that it would be like walking on a treadmill.
Mm. Right.
So that they would have to use more energy to get to where they wanted to go to counter the flow of the ice. But, you know, really that was a very isolated study that I don't think really had applications to the general population or to, you know, to other areas of the world.
Just to double check something, polar bears eat seals. Are seal numbers still fine in the Arctic?
Yes. Mind you, there have been no studies on the seals, and that's, you know, the other problem is there are no firm counts of seals, but certainly, the primary evidence that we have is from the area in the Chukchi Sea, which is the area between Alaska and Russia, in just north of the Bering Sea there. And they've been doing studies on the seals, the ring seals and bearded seals in those areas. And what they've found is that those seals are doing much better with less ice in summer than they were doing in the 80s. So they're fatter, they're having more pups, so they're doing really well. And that would suggest their numbers are increasing, because that's usually what happens when things are going well. And so that is also counter to the predictions.
Right.
The experts suggested that if the ice in summer went down, that the seal numbers would drop. And that's not what they're finding. And it turns out, which they should have known, is that those seal species do most of their feeding during the summer when there's no ice. And so if that period is longer, they have longer time to feed, longer time to get fat, and that improves their health. So it suggests that pattern is true around the Arctic, because those seal species are present throughout the Arctic, and that's why they're so important to the bears. And is undoubtedly one of the reasons why the bears are continuing to thrive.
In a weird counterintuitive way, it sort of makes sense that if there was a lot more ice, there would be a lot more ground to cover for the polar bears to hunt, and almost would be a negative thing, because that.
Yes, exactly. And one of the things is that. You hear people talking about, well, there's less thick ice, that the ice is getting thinner. and that that's a problem. Well, there may be other reasons why having less thick ice might be an issue, but for polar bears, it's a good thing because the seals that they eat need that ice to be not too thick.
Yes. In fact, may I interrupt you and just show you a little bit of my knowledge?
Sure, absolutely.
So on that sea ice, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but underneath the sea ice, there's a type of algae that grows. And that algae attracts other sea life, which then attracts things like seals and other kinds of bigger fish. And then, of course, the polar bears have more food because there are more seals, etc., etc. Am I correct?
Yes.
I actually saw that on that documentary, and I never realized that there can be life growing on underneath ice,
yes.
And that's very important to in terms of sea ice because it floats. You can't have that
yes.
on massive pieces of ice that go very deep down.
Yes, and so it's one of the reasons why when you look at the distribution of polar bears, they tend to be like. Not too far from shore, because that's where the shallow areas around the Arctic are, and that's where the bears are highest in numbers.
Just in terms of the animals themselves, are polar bears pack animals? Are they? Do they live on their own? Are they family orientated?
No, they're isolated. So they live in fair isolation. Except for mothers with cubs. So the cubs stay with their mothers for between 2 and 3 years sometimes. But other than that, you have the problem of adult males will sometimes kill the cubs.
Mm.
So for that reason, mothers with cubs stay away from adult males. And the only time where the bears seem to congregate is during the summer, like when the ice retreats. If they're on shore, spending the summer on shore, then they actually do tolerate being in close proximity to each other because the mating season is over. They're usually in their best condition of the year. Mm. They're usually quite fat, and so there is no pressure for them to be fighting or worrying about each other.
Polar bears are an apex predator. That's correct. Yes?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
If climate change isn't their number one problem, what is? Humans, perhaps?
Yes, well, definitely. We've already shown that the kind of wanton overhunting that went on in the late 1800s and the early 20th century was absolutely devastating to them. And so that really is their, overhunting is their biggest threat.
Are they,
and we've addressed, you know.
Are they protected now?
Yes, they're protected. They were protected internationally in 1973. So they've been protected for quite a long time. And it's the other issue that comes up with relation to numbers. So all of these polar bear specialists keep trying to imply that the population has remained stable since the early 1990s. But in fact, for all other species that were protected in the early 70s, and you can probably come up with examples from Africa yourself, that they just go up and up. You know, humpback whales were protected about the same time, and now in most of them have been taken off the endangered species list because there's so many. And so there's an odd insistence by the polar bear community that polar bear numbers have not grown.
Why do you think
and
that is, though?
I find it peculiar. Well, partly there is the whole unknown about Russia. Is that, you know, there, and that part of that I think goes back to kind of the Cold War animosity between the U.S. and Russia.
Politics.
And but, you know, clearly Russia hasn't had the money to put towards doing a count, although just recently, it came out a few weeks ago, actually, that they have a plan, that they are going to do a population survey of their entire country over the next 5 years. So, you know, that will make a huge difference. That's if the Western biologists actually accept the numbers they come up with.
Wait, so
because they've got a tradition of saying, well, you know, yeah, but they did it this way, and we don't think that's good enough.
Hang on, so I just want to understand this. Are you suggesting that there are much more polar bears in Russia that's currently known?
Yes, because it could add somewhere between 8,000 and 10,000.
Good heavens!
To the number that we have, because none of the areas have been surveyed recently, and some areas not at all.
What if the ice were to disappear? Now, I've only ever seen a polar bear in a zoo, so I know that it can survive without ice. Let's just, as a thought experiment, let's just pretend for a second that all the ice in the Arctic disappeared. Would the polar bears disappear also with that?
I would say yes, because they are adapted to eat primarily fat, and that's important. And if the ice would disappear, then the seals would be forced to have their pups on land. So there might be enough for them to live like along the coastlines for a while. But if the seals were subjected to that kind of really intense predation, they might not survive for long.
Right.
And the thing is that other than there's the productivity of the land is not very high in those areas of the Arctic. And there is a few areas where there are grizzly bears that live. And in those instances, the polar bears would be in competition.
And also because they're white, they would very easily be noticeable on land.
Well, I don't think that's going to matter so much. Mm. And you know, it might be for their ability to hunt seals on land, and that might make a difference. But I think it's more likely that in the some areas it would be interactions with the grizzlies, because grizzlies are dominant, and
right.
they would chase off the polar bears, and so they would exclude them from good areas. And grizzly bears can eat on vegetation; they can live on vegetation, but polar bears cannot.
Oh, so
unless polar no, so polar bears, if they don't have access to high fat levels,
sure,
then they're going to be gone.
So wait, hang on. So are you saying grizzly bears can eat a vegetarian diet while polar bears can't?
Yes.
Sure, that's fascinating.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's the primary difference between
right.
them, really, is that, and that's the specialization that polar bears have, is that, you know, they need to eat that fat to keep them going.
You're welcome to laugh at this question, but why are there no polar bears in the Antarctic? Is it simply because they didn't ever make it there over the years, or is there an actual climatic difference that is just not compatible with them?
Well, I think it would be it would be climatically compatible, but polar bears evolved from grizzly bears, which only live in the northern hemisphere, and so that's primarily the reason. And they couldn't move to the Antarctic because no ice could ever survive getting through the tropics.
So let's again, as another thought experiment, but let's say now that there was a ship traveling down to the Antarctic and they took polar bear cubs with them, or not polar bear cubs,
yeah,
but let's say a mother and a female, I beg your pardon, and try to create a population of polar bears. Do you think that they could adapt and live there?
I think so, yes, because there are seals
and,
for them to eat
and
to,
penguins
to feed on. And that was, yeah, and penguins. And so, you know, there certainly would be food. You know, it would then upset the balance that's going on there, but that would probably take a while for that to have an impact. But certainly if they were put there, then there would be things for them to eat, and I think they would be fine.
Have polar bears ever lived anywhere else other than the Arctic? I'm guessing the answer is no.
No. But what is interesting is that there are some areas of the Arctic where there are no polar bears, where you might expect there to be some.
For example.
And for example, the Sea of Okhotsk, which is between the Kamchatka Peninsula in the far east of Russia, and you have both of the seal species that polar bears eat. There's a number of whales that also go into the Arctic. It freezes over. There's ice there in the winter. So it's got all of what you might consider to be the correct conditions. But as far as we know, there's no polar bears live there now, and as far as we know, they never have.
Sheesh.
And the same is true for the Baltic, you know, in Scandinavia, that area there where there's also seals, there's also ice in the winter, but there are no polar bears.
Goodness me. You said earlier that your adjunct position was revoked. Now, what is it that you said that's so controversial that would have made that happen?
The problem is that I really don't know. We have to go back a little bit to 2017. And well, I have to preface it by pointing out that since 2009, I had been participating in a program that the university has that's called the Speakers Bureau. And what it does is put, you know, community groups and school, like teachers, in touch with both students and professors who have things to say. And so I had been giving lectures on polar bears to the community since 2009. And in 2016, because I was constantly being asked by elementary school teachers to come and talk to children, I put together a special presentation for children. And as I said earlier, I had one of the questions I asked the teachers were, how many do you think are left? And at some point in the fall, or the spring rather, of 2017, when it was time to sign up for the next year, I was refused to continue participating in this Speakers Bureau. And when I asked, they said it was because there had been complaints from parents that some of my lectures were not balanced. Now, you know, that was no one asking me what I had said. No one asked to see my presentation. As far as I know, like, no parents were present at these lectures, that there were teachers and students. So anyway, it was it very much felt like this was political pressure being put by the university on the Speakers Bureau to stop me from speaking to the community. And then 2 years later, when my adjunct status came up for renewal, it was denied.
So you were saying that the polar bear population is actually quite healthy, and this, of course, is not what they wanted to hear. They would have preferred to have heard that it's terrible. It's a very
Exactly.
I don't you
Exactly.
know
And
I don't get that.
I don't get that either. And you know, I was really trying to be what I thought was responsible as a scientist, which was to give the children information about polar bears that they would be interested in and that they needed to know, you know, in understanding Arctic ecology without frightening them,
right?
You know, like making them upset about, you know, dying polar bears. And it turned out that no, everybody wanted me to frighten the children.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how convinced would you say you are of your interpretation of the data? If 10 being is absolutely convinced.
Of the what?
Of the data, your interpretation of the data, that the numbers are quite healthy. How convinced are you?
Oh, that the numbers are healthy?
Mm.
I'm very convinced, because, as I said, I've been going through the literature and I can see where the numbers have been artificially repressed and made to look lower than they really are. So I'm really quite convinced that there could be as many as 39,000.
Sure.
At the present time. And that would be from going, for example, using an area like the Chukchi Sea, where they did a recent survey and came up with an estimate of about 3,000 bears. Well, if you use that estimate to look at the other areas of Russia and provide numbers for that, then you come up with an estimate that's about, and I think that is a plausible and a scientifically defensible estimate at the moment.
It's observable data, not based on computer models.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And so, you know, the polar bear experts are still saying that if sea ice in the summer declines, you know, completely, so that there's no ice left at all, that then, you know, our other prediction was wrong, but then the polar bears are really going to be in trouble. But really, it doesn't look like that's the case. Is that the research that they have been doing, that is now in the scientific literature, really suggests that as long as the bears are able to feed as heavily as they need to in the spring, so that would be from April until June, that they can actually survive a 5 to 6 month fast.
Sure.
Over the summer.
Yeah, look, I don't think I can go more than a day without eating. but just to, I want to make sure that I've got everything that you're saying correct. So you're saying from about, I forget now what year it was in the 70s, but basically in the 1970s till today, the numbers have been increasing. Is that correct?
Yes. And the numbers, I think, have been artificially dampened to make it look like they're not increasing. But that's a factor of no surveys been done in Russia, no recent surveys been done in a number of areas. And so, you know, I really think that you have to go on the last few surveys we have that are in recent years that are good numbers, and then extrapolate to other regions that are similar. And that's how I came up with my number of 39,000.
Why were the numbers not increasing prior to the 70s?
There were no counts done before then.
Oh, I understand.
So
okay.
there was no data at all on how many there might have been.
Sure.
And so all we can go on are like some of the estimates of the numbers of bears that were shot during the period of overhunting. Mm-hmm. And certainly there were a lot.
Are polar bears a threat to humans? I don't quite know the distribution of polar bears, but I suspect that some of them would venture very close to towns or cities.
Well, what's been happening now is that because there are so many polar bears now compared to, say, 1960, is that they definitely are. They can come ashore at any time of year, not just the summer. Many of them have learned now that if there is a community, that community will have a garbage dump, and that people and that people store food.
Right.
In a lot of the areas of the Arctic, the people live on the same food that polar bears eat. In other words, they hunt seals, they hunt whales for their fat, and so there is a problem. And in a number of areas in recent years, there have been quite considerable problems of bears coming ashore and threatening people.
But are polar bears scared of humans?
Sometimes. And it depends on the situation and the bear's state of mind. Because there are times when, like one of the incidents in 2018, there was a group of hunters that was attacked by a bear. And they had a rifle shot at her, and she refused to stop.
Sure.
She kept coming. And so, like, that's the problem. In another situation, another bear might have run away. And so you can't say one way or the other that it's always going to work to try and scare them off. Sometimes it does, but it doesn't always.
You're in Canada. I'm guessing you have interacted with polar bears up close.
No, I have not.
Oh, okay.
I don't do field research. It's not my specialty. But the thing is about my background as a zoologist is that doing the research to do a PhD, what it teaches you is to go and look at the scientific research and to look at it critically and to put it in the context of a bigger picture. And so that's the skill that I've applied to these polar bear issues, is I've gone back to the literature from when polar bear research first started in the 60s and 70s and looked at the information that was being generated then and comparing it to what's happening now. And so one of the reasons why some of these polar bear experts are unhappy with some of my comments is one, that no one's ever questioned them before.
Right.
And another, that I use their own paper, their own data, to support my arguments. I'm not making stuff up. I'm not going out and collecting the information. I'm using the information they've collected themselves and pointing out, listen, you said this in 1976. Now you're saying this.
Right. Someone in the comments is worried about the fact that you haven't done field work, but I don't. You've just explained that it's not critical to looking at data.
No, absolutely. You don't have to put a collar on a polar bear to look at published figures about numbers and other data in order to make a scientific assessment of whether that's valid or not. And I always include references when I do my blog posts, and I've written a scientific paper on this that's available online. And it's you can, if someone wants to make an argument that I've misrepresented something or that my argument isn't valid, then fine, like, come at me with your argument, but don't suggest that I don't have the expertise to make that argument just because I haven't patted a polar bear on the head.
Yeah, I think that what you're saying is true, because I mean a lot of people can do research on elephants or rhinos without necessarily going and living in a hut alongside an elephant or a rhino. You can look at the numbers that are already published.
Yes.
And all the data. Yeah, so I mean, I understand what you're saying. There was something I wanted to ask you earlier. It wasn't science related, but let's just pretend for a second, in the unlikely event that you come up close to a polar bear, what is the best response to it? I mean, I'm in the Southern Hemisphere, so it's probably never going to happen.
Yeah.
But
well, one of the things that I've discovered from all my reading is that polar bears have their own language of aggression. And one of the things that a polar bear does, if it's cornered and is telling another bear, like, back off, is to hiss, like, psst.
Sure.
And that's a signal they understand. And I read that, and then I saw it used by a Russian photographer who was all dressed in white, to kind of conceal himself, and he was trying to get real close-ups with a camera and allowing the bears to get really close. And when they got too close for comfort for him, he would just hiss at them
Wow.
and they would back right off. So, and I knew what he was doing when he did that. But it was interesting to see how well it actually worked. But if a bear was actually intent on eating you,
No, then you will.
I don't think that that would work. Not for very long, anyway.
You've got quite an extensive knowledge on sort of evolution as well in with relation to polar bears. Where do they come from? What is the polar bear's lineage?
Well, I mean, again, there are conflicting reports, but I think the one that makes the most sense in terms of all the information that's available is Ireland. And so there was a population of grizzly bears living in Ireland. And so what I would imagine is, so you have grizzly bears living in Ireland, and an ice age comes, and what it does is gradually come with a big ice sheet and pushing the bears further and further, and contracting the habitat where they can live, and that eventually some of them figure out that there's seals out there on the ice that they can eat, and that's the impetus. So they almost certainly had to have evolved during an ice age period, when there would be that kind of movement of ice, and it would have to happen in a place where the ice was coming from the north and pushing them. And Ireland is just about the only place there is where that could take place. And what we know from genetics is
Right.
that they are very close. So.
You said there are conflicting stories. What would be one of the conflicting stories?
Well, there was one report that was suggesting that that the bears evolved during a warm period, which I thought was very strange. And but in that case, they weren't providing a rationale for their decision. They were just using the data that they had, like the genetic data, and putting it on a timeline and seeing that it came out during a warm period. And but it's one of the problems that I have with some geneticists who are often their all of their expertise is in doing genetic work. They are not experts in evolution or geology or any of those things. And so, they sometimes publish things like that don't make sense in terms of the big picture. Like you can't propose, there's no sense in proposing that polar bears evolved from grizzly bears a million years ago, when in fact we have no evidence that grizzly bears even lived a million years ago. Like you have to have the evidence to back that up. And so it looks like that grizzly bears, actually, the oldest fossils of those are only just under a million years old.
Sure. Just
So
before.
you have to make sure that all those pieces of evidence fit together. And often, some of these papers don't go that extra step. I guess that's what I'm getting at.
Someone in the comments is saying, like the out of Africa theory based only on genetics. I'm not quite certain I understand that question.
I think that what he's getting at, that there are some papers and theories coming out about human evolution that are based only on genetics and not, and again, not about what we've got in the fossil record, what was going on in terms of geology and changing climates at the time, those kinds of things. And so it's some of them are not always put into the bigger perspective.
Susan, just for a bit of fun, because we are nearing an hour, someone was asked, did climate change kill the woolly mammoth?
Well, one of the things that happened was that the ice sheets that covered the Northern Hemisphere, they created a kind of new habitat. And what happened when the ice retreated was that that habitat started to disappear. And so it really did. The end of the ice age meant the end of the woolly mammoth, except for a few places where they hung on for a bit longer.
Okay, but then quickly tell me about the elephant, because they seem to be, in my very limited knowledge, they seem to be related.
Well, they definitely are related, but I'm trying to remember what the age is. I mean, a woolly mammoth is an ice age species in the sense that it's connected to the ice ages, but it does come out of the elephant lineage.
Right.
But it needs a particular kind of habitat, and I think that what has happened is that there has no, I'm not going to say that because I can't remember the actual details on the woolly mammoth evolution.
I think a very good documentary to watch would be that one called Ice Age.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that, now I've got so many things running in my head that I can't hold on to all of those bits of information. But it's a good question. And the point partly of it is that the polar bear is an ice age species as well, and it's one of the few that has managed to hold on,
Right.
now that that ice age has passed. And also there's also a muskox, but a polar bear is doing very well,
Right.
and as an ice age species.
Yeah, someone's saying it's still a bit of a mystery, the whole woolly mammoth story. Susan, I've really enjoyed the conversation. It's a very original conversation because not many people chat about polar bears. But thank you very, very much. I do have the links to your website and the book on Amazon for people to buy, which I would recommend. I have it. As I said to Susan just before we went live, I am very ashamed to say I've not read the book yet, because I'm busy with a few others. But I will read it very soon. Let me just, sorry, I see another comment just popped in. I'll read it to you quickly. Put it like this: so we are currently living closer to the time of Cleopatra than what Cleopatra does to the creation of the pyramids, and a species was found 13,000 years old. I'd have no idea what that comment means. I read it as it came
Yeah,
through.
no, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I understand what point they're trying to make.
I think what he's saying is that where we are today, we're closer to Cleopatra than what Cleopatra was to the construction of the pyramids. But I'm not quite certain how that links to polar bears. But it is an
No.
interesting timeline thought experiment.
Yes. Well, I mean, but I have to say that I'm very impressed that there are people like yourself in South Africa who are interested in this topic. And because, as you said when we were talking earlier, I mean, it informs on a lot of the issues of conservation that you have going where you are, and we can all learn something about those different issues because of that.
Well, I mean, one of the great things about South Africa is that we are very conscious of conservation. We have a great variety of very big animals, and so and my wife being a vet adds to the to at least to my own interest with the talking point. Sorry, and the comment is, you just clarified what you're saying. You're saying that the mammoth is 13,000 years old. Is that correct?
That was when some of the when most of them disappeared.
Oh, right.
So, so it's
Okay, well, thank you so much, Susan. Don't go anywhere. I'm going to just quickly play my outro video. Thank you to everybody who was listening, and I will see you again soon.